Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. So great to be once again chatting with the one and only Mike Wall. You can find him on Twitter at MikeWall68. It's been great chatting with Mike all season long, breaking down all of these Packers wins and losses. Unfortunately, we end on a loss. But Mike, before we get there, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. Jet lag's gone. Feel great. Trying to deal with some of the cold, but I'm not going to talk to you about that, certainly.
No, it is very, very cold here in Green Bay. We've been under 10 degrees pretty much all week, but that is another story for another day as well. Let's kick off things, Mike, with this game. I just want to get kind of your 10,000 foot view of what happened, what went wrong, and just your overarching analysis of what happened to Green Bay towards the end of this season.
Yeah, this game just summed up that great Mike Tyson quote. Everyone's got to play until they get punched in the mouth. Yeah, so well, not just with obviously Nixon getting just absolutely smashed, fumbling the football. They run for 14 yards on the first play. Two plays later, he's got over five seconds to throw the football. You know, everyone is finally beating the back of the end zone. Quarterback's getting rushed early on. Ellen Jenkins goes out with a stinger. I mean, all of this stuff. I think the biggest problem that you see with the game is accumulation of all those body blows, right? You give up the fumble. It's like, okay, we just gave him another chance at points. Okay, we gave up points. Okay, you know, two series later, one of our better, if not best, linemen goes out. So now we have to reshuffle. As you watched the game, just talking about offensive line play and how much Elgin Jenkins had a real effect on this game, that play. And he didn't play well early on, to be fair. But he's net, they're probably going into that game saying, like, okay, we're going to slide Josh to the right because that's a real problem against our right guard. We're going to chip on the way out for both tackles, which they did for a lot of the game. And then, like, there's only one guy that's going to have a problem. And you know, to be fair, they're all good on the Eagles' defensive line, but that was probably their fourth best guy of their four starters that he was going to go against. So you're thinking, okay, I'll single block one of my better players on this entire football team against maybe their lower guy on the defensive line. And then you put in a backup, and it's like, oh, no, because it's – whether or not he has a couple of those holding calls were nonsense. And he didn't he showed that he could actually play football, to be fair. But what happens is, as a play caller, you're all of a sudden like, boy, this sheet doesn't look the same all of a sudden, because I just don't feel comfortable that I can make these calls knowing that, you know, my center is always sliding to the right now. What is that going to look like? So, we were talking about it offline, the better football team won. I thought the defense played really well. If you hold the Philadelphia Eagles to 22 points in the playoffs at home, you should win the football game.
Yeah.
Like that's the mindset of this team. Like, this team scores enough points to think that 22 is going to be enough. They did a lot really well. The problem with any of these games is if you give the other team four extra chances with the football, you're going to lose the game. I mean, who goes on the road against a good football team and gives up, you know, four turnovers and wins? Like, nobody does that. So that's just the name of the game. I thought TJ Slayton had a hell of a game inside. I thought he played really well for the most part. Obviously, he had that penalty that everybody's, you know, probably talking about, but he did really well against their interior offensive line, which is really, really good. And then, you know, the only thing, we'll probably talk about it, but I was a little surprised that, is Wilson hurt? Like, why, you know, because Quay was playing, that whole thing, and each, it showed early on, like, the stuff that we've been seeing from the linebackers as far as attacking gaps fast downhill. He was hesitating behind double teams again, got beat on the first play for it. And so you start going like, you don't want to second guess because those guys are getting paid to make the decisions. But that was interesting.
Yeah. So I'm just reading between the lines here. Where you thought, you know, just with Quay playing full time and Wilson being benched, that was a little bit of a difference there.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, if you look at the production between those, I mean, if you watch the tape between those two, there's a suddenness that we've been attacking the line of scrimmage. Like, I mean, there was one play where probably Quay's best play of the game. Cooper pushes him into the center and knocks him over. He knocks the center over and makes the play at the line of scrimmage. You know, that's not his best play of the game, but you get my point. Like, you know, Cooper's like, go, you know, we're playing downhill. And it's just, that's not, you know, part of his DNA, I think, as much as the other three guys. And so against a team like that, when they're so good at staying square up front and you have to turn everything into a single blocker, you're done for. If you're going to play behind the doubles, it's a real problem. And I think the times that he did that, he got exposed.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. It's interesting. I think there's some weaknesses in Eric Wilson's game, but for whatever reason, it has felt like there's been a better synergy between Eric Wilson and Edgerrin Cooper. And when those two are out there, it just feels to flow kind of just a little bit better. But yeah, I think probably Quay being his first game back, having that as the matchup against a really good offensive line and a great running back. Now really kind of the first time that Edgerrin Cooper was playing full time next to Quay Walker, I'm sure there were probably some synergies that just weren't there. And hopefully that's something that can be a lot better in 2025, because I would assume that Quay Walker and Edgerrin Cooper are going to be the primary two patrolling that second level of the field. So they're going to need those two to play really, really well together. And they're going to probably need a little bit of a better season in year five from Quay Walker on the total. I thought midway through, right before the injury, we saw some really good Quay Walker, but on the whole, it kind of felt like a similar sort of story for him on the season.
What was interesting, and we saw it a little bit last year, was when they start playing him down, when you give him an assignment, it allows him to kind of unlock, I think, a little bit as far as athleticism and not confidence, but just you become a more instinctive player, because it's like, you know, the more structure they give you, actually the freer your mind becomes. So I think that I saw that last year a lot, and you started seeing a little bit more walking him up in the A gap, running all those different, you know, kind of run dogs. And then he got hurt, like you said, but obviously Cooper does a great job of that as well. But when you watch, like, one thing that stands out when you put them next to each other, and we're probably going off a tangent because this is not the reason we lost the football game.
Right.
But when you put them next to each other and you see how instinctive the one is, and I think he jumps off the screen anyways, right? But, you know, they're both being kind of high draft picks in the whole thing. And then having all those kids on, you know, from Georgia on the field at the same time, you start going, oh, that's, boy, they had some interesting picks from Georgia as well. You know what I mean? So it's a little bit of that. Yeah, a little bit of that too. But I think that the linebacker room is really good. There's room for improvement, but from where they were last year to this year has been great. A great source of kind of optimism for the Packers internally. But as we get to the end of this conversation, I'm sure, you know, one of the questions would have to be like, what does that room look like next year? And are we going to be handing out jobs, or do people have to earn them?
They're going to hand out jobs, would be my guess. Yeah. They're going to add to that room for sure. I could see Eric Wilson getting, you know, coming back on a vet minimum or something like that. I don't think McDuffie will be back, but I mean,
he'll start somewhere else.
Yeah. I would have a feeling that they're going to go into the season with the idea that their top three are their three high draft picks, and Edgerrin Cooper, Quay Walker, and then Tyron Hopper trying to get into that base defense role would be my guess. And then again, they'll add some depth pieces, some competition in there, but I would be pretty surprised if there was anything besides like a slightly over vet minimum linebacker added and or anything in the first top 100 picks at off ball linebacker. Not impossible, but I'd be surprised. I think you're probably looking at day three selections and vet minimum kind of guys to round out that room, if I had to guess.
Yeah, gosh, it's so hard because, you know, like you look at Jack Campbell, and you didn't think of the Lions going like, I really needed this position. I mean, Anzalone already. I mean, they had guys who were playing, but it's like, if you can bring a guy in who from day one is going to be a dude, linebacker is still a really, really important position in the National Football League. I think it's getting more important because of the 12 and 13 personnel you're seeing so much. So, and Quay is, it's really hard again, because I think I bias him against his draft pick status, you know, because if you said he was a third rounder, I'd go, man, he's amazing. You know, he's a really good third rounder. But when you go, oh, he's a first round pick, you go, oh, okay. You know, we still got a little bit to grow into do to even be the best person in the room. So, or, you know, even worthy of starting in that room if all things being equal. So We'll see how it goes. I'm sure there's going to continue to make progress, but probably
here's,
move on to
here's
else.
The biggest question in the linebacker room. Does Quay get the fifth year option picked up? I think that's maybe the most intriguing. I don't think he does, but that's the more intriguing. Devontae Wyatt's obviously in that situation as well. Those are going to be two of the biggest decisions, or two bigger decisions that Goody's going to have to make this offseason as to whether or not to pick up both of those fifth year options. I don't feel really great about picking up either of them, to be honest, but I don't think I would either. The last time they did, they made a mistake doing it with Darnell Savage. I could see Wyatt a little bit more because defensive tackles are just tougher to find, but anything in that, like it's somewhere between like 12 and 15 million on a 1 year deal, totally fully guaranteed. That's a tough pill to swallow for two guys that have not exactly been big time impact players on, defensive line or at linebacker.
This always goes back to like page 237 on the Ron Wolf, handbook though, of we don't admit to making mistakes in first round draft picks. So we'll be interesting to see. I don't want to call them mistakes. That's not fair. It's not Jamal Reynolds or something, but
I know,
you know what I mean? So listen, I'm forever going to be bullish on Quay Walker because I just generally think like he does everything well. There's just some instinct things that you see improving. It's just like, how much time do you want to take? Because some of these like other guys like Isaiah McDuffie and Wilson might not be nearly the athletes, and everybody has deficiencies across the board, but just the kind of guys that you're looking at, look at Zach Bond on the freaking Eagles, damn all pro that he was a special teams player last year. It's like, are you kidding me? It's like, just fine. Devondre Campbell comes here for, and granted it was 1 year, but there's 1 year where you're like, man, he's doing really, really well in this league. And sometimes you just have to find that fit, that coach, that system, whatever it is. And, hopefully they found it here.
Well, I think the interesting thing here too, and maybe we'll see Tyron Hopper take a jump, or maybe they will attack the position more than I'm expecting. But everybody really besides Edrian Cooper, Evan Williams, Javon Bullard, Xavier McKinney, everyone except those four guys, Tyron Hopper, who we didn't really see play, was brought in for Joe Barry's 3-4 defense. So the only guys that really were brought in for this defense, again, we don't know what Hopper is going to be, but Cooper, Xavier McKinney, Evan Williams, Javon Bullard, that's a pretty good ROI.
They're best players.
The best players that actually fit the defense, right? So now we're going to see in 2025, again, Goody be able to go out and find players that are specifically set up for this defense. Hopefully some of the guys that were coming over from the previous defense are feeling more comfortable in year two of playing in Jeff Hafley's system. But yeah, the best kind of defenders on this team are the ones that were brought in for it. And now we'll see if they can actually bring in some more guys fit for this defense. And maybe even if they do bring in a fourth, fifth round linebacker that is actually fit for this defense, maybe it's not impossible that that player could potentially outplay and get on the field and make an impact. So you never quite know. And it'll be interesting to see how they attack it. Obviously, Mike better than maybe anyone. When you get these losses, especially when you get three in a row and when you get a playoff loss at the end of the season, everything gets put under a very crazy microscope. And of course, that always starts with the head coach and the quarterback. I want to start with Jordan Love here. Of course, there's the immediate gut reactions of he's not the guy or whatever. How do you evaluate Jordan Love on this season and how do you feel about him moving forward?
I think the thing that you have to remember is Jordan's a second year starter, even though he's in his fifth season,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
And every context matters. Like, you just paid the guy a $250 million contract. So there's expectations that come with that, right? The Wall Street Journal article just published this morning talked about how Sam Darnold just lost $10 million in two games. Because there's expectations about how, projecting how you're going to play based on these results. And Jordan, the thing about Jordan is he's got all the tools. And so every coach that ever sees him is going to go, he's got all the tools. He's got all the physical. It sounds like he's a super smart kid. Matt said that they want him to be more of a vocal leader. That's just kind of a throwaway, what do you want him to work on thing, BS for the media. It might be true, but it's not, it's not really what he wants them to work on. But if you just watch, craft mastery, doing it better than 90% of your peer group at that level.
Yep.
That's where you want your quarterback to be. And so, are you there yet? Absolutely not. Are you there yet from a footwork standpoint? Are you there from a mechanic standpoint? Are you there from a decision-making standpoint? You're not. And what you have to be bullish and optimistic on, because you don't have a choice because you just gave him this monster contract, is that you have a really good play caller. You still have a young receiver room. You've brought in this amazing running back. His shelf life's, you know, only a couple of years, but you know, so it is. But you do have this window of opportunity for hyper growth with Jordan Love. And I think what's key for him moving forward is understanding that to be the guy, you have to be willing to take the risks, right? And he's been willing to take the risks. That's a big deal.
Yep.
Now, on the other side of that, you have to put yourself in the best situation to be successful. And I don't think he's done that. I don't think he approaches his drops with the mechanical sincerity that he should. I don't think that he throws off the right, you know, he doesn't transition his hips well enough, as well as he can on rep to rep. Some of the decision-making processes and just understanding the kind of the football IQ of this, as far as when to take a check down, when to take a risk, understanding what the situation is in the game. There's some of those things that can improve, and because that's where he didn't take a step forward from the year before. We're kind of saying the same thing as we did last year. And so for me, it's just really wanting to become a master of your craft that is going to require him to really maybe take a look at what he's doing in the offseason, the preseason, what they're doing with the coaching staff and during training camp. But how do you flip that switch to become a kind of a 10%er or a 5%er in this league of really, really good? Yeah, there's 15 really good quarterbacks in the league now. So it was like, how do I become a top five guy? You know, that's got to be the drive.
Yeah, I think that attention to detail is something that's come out really for the entirety of the team, but specifically the offense. We heard some of the routes that were run at the wrong depth. And, again, Jordan just being a little bit more clean with his fundamentals and his footwork and his, mechanics on everything. I think that attention to detail is going to go a long way. And I think one of the things that you kind of pointed out there too, that I didn't feel like he ever had a level of comfortability of when to hit his back foot and rip it, when to take chances, when to be a game manager, when to put on the Superman cape, like just figuring out the right balance of when to just kind of take what's there, when to take the check down, when to throw it away. And then when you kind of need to be a little bit more aggressive and or maybe rip it through a tight window. It felt like there were times where he had it, but it didn't feel consistent enough. And I think just kind of figuring out that feel, it felt like he had it at the end of 2023. It felt like he was in a really good spot. I don't know if the injuries and the lack of practice time in 2024 just affected him to a greater extent, but just didn't feel like he ever quite got in that rhythm. And maybe wide receivers, offensive line, other stuff had a lot to do with that as well, but never really felt like he got there.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, the game is, as a kind of a coach, the game is all about instilling confidence in your players.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason, the number one, two, and three reason that we're doing our job. And, you know, probably what would happen with Jordan is he experienced a great deal of kind of a confidence boost. And, you know, sometimes there's earned confidence, right? And then there's sometimes situationally, you know, situations that decry an elevation of confidence that maybe is not battle tested yet, right?
Yeah.
I think that with Jordan and, you know, any young quarterback, like it, this is what happens. You look at a Matt Stafford, you look at a Mahomes, and you look at the way they operate in the pocket, right? You look at, I'm very, very specifically the footwork in the pocket, the timing in the pocket, when to pull the trigger, when to release the ball, when to move forward. And then you look at some really good quarterbacks, CJ, Jordan, Burrow sometimes. Right. You look at these different guys and you go, okay, the Super Bowl winning quarterbacks are doing these little details at a level that the guys that are, we might think are the MVPs of the league, we might think are the up and coming stars, they're not doing those little things at the same, the details at the same level. And it's very monotonous and it's boring and talking about the minutiae of the sport. But really, when it boils down to, like, if you want a room full of absolute like killers, you got to have a couple guys in there that are the best at the basics of the sport, the best at the details, are able to execute at a high level. And that conversion of like, I do all my fundamentals so well that I can focus all my brain power on reading and reacting. Like, you need a couple of those guys, and you definitely need one at the quarterback position.
Yeah, I think so too. And I'm intrigued to see what kind of step he makes. Obviously, we just found out that there's going to be a new quarterbacks coach in Green Bay. We'll see what that entails, if that's, you know, better, worse, and different. Obviously, losing Tom Clements is not going to seem to, not usually going to be a good thing, but, you know, sometimes a change of a voice can help as well. So I think it's going to be a really big season in 2025 for Jordan, and see, hopefully fully healthy and hopefully able to get a little bit more of that rhythm this next year.
Go ahead. I was just agreeing with you just to say, sorry, you know, we're going back. I was just going to agree with you and say, you brought up the offensive line and the wide receivers, and I think that's a huge part of it too.
Yep. That's exactly where I was going to go. I actually wanted to ask you about the offensive line, because I talked to Justice Mosqueda earlier this week, and he felt pretty adamant that, you know, some of the stuff with the pass blocking, I mean, you look at some of the PFF, the analytics stuff, the next gen stats, and it looks like it's a really good offensive line. But I think you've kind of brought this up in the past. I know Justice has brought it up of, hey, sometimes maybe this offensive line isn't quite as good as some of the numbers may point out. It does feel like there's a lot of, and how Justice was kind of talking about it was like, what is actually defined as a pressure? You know, like there's a lot of maybe slow burn collapsing pockets around Jordan that he doesn't seem to feel super comfortable in. Where are you at with this offensive line, and how much do you think the play of the offensive line affected Jordan either positively or negatively?
Overall or during this game specifically?
Overall, yes, overall.
Yeah. So, and you're referencing Justice.
Justice Mosqueda. It's all good. He is on our Tuesday show with us weekly.
Oh, cool. Okay. So, well, listen, with respect, PFF's done a great job of marketing, but you know, there's so much context that goes into the data. And if you don't have context and data, it's somewhat meaningless. This offensive line, we saw it against the Eagles, and the Eagles are better up front than we are, period. Yeah. Period, point blank. You would take, you know, if you had to trade, you'd say, please, I'm more than happy to trade. And what you saw was every time that we had a one-on-one, their defensive line versus our offensive line, if we chipped out both tackles and we slid, you know, Josh to the right, the left guard was going to get beat. If we slid everybody to the right and left the left tackle by himself, he was going to get beat. I mean, because they're better players than we are. Yeah. And this is just kind of the conversation that we've had a lot. This scheme is as offensive line friendly as you can get when it's run in the context of, like, you know, the game's close and we don't have to drop back every time. You know, just the way that Matt calls plays, the way that the quarterback has different throwing points, the run game. I mean, it's all extremely friendly. All the waggles, all the keepers, everything. So there's a lot of that, and that's fantastic. And the good teams, that's what they do. The Green Bay Packers do a really good job of, and the Philadelphia Eagles do the same thing, of they try to build a kind of a curved wall more than a cup. I think we talked about this last week. So they're trying to they'll take the slow burn. They'll take the pressure, okay, because the pressure is better than somebody getting beat right off the jump, getting a short corner and being able to run on the edge. So that pressure, that, like, that person coming into your back over the course of, let's say, 4 to 5 seconds is so much better than, you know, 7 out of 10 times you win, but 3 out of 10 times the guy's running free, right? Which is what happens when we short set, we angle set, we flat set, all that stuff. That's just the name of the game. If you're going to do that, you're playing with fire, you're going to get beat, and quarterbacks are going to get hit. So I think, generally speaking, the philosophy of how they go about pass pro is, I think, very sound, but it leaves a couple problems, I suppose. The first problem is, if you hold the football or if you drift, you can get pressure from the tackles, because the tackles have to get even deeper than the guards before initial contact.
Sure.
So if you drift, and we see that with Jordan Love a lot, he drifts, he likes to drift to his left, so the guy's always in his pocket. That's one problem. The other problem is, when you exit the pocket, more often than not, you're going to exit out and away with your chest towards the sideline, because all of a sudden these guys are like, if we run out of options, you're just going to bull rush me. And if you bull rush me, I can't, you know, the quarterback just can't run right by. I'll clothesline you. So they're not taking lanes as much necessarily. they're just pushing you back. And so if you hit the eject button, you have to eject away and out towards the sideline. Those make throws more difficult. And obviously you can lose yardage with more time to recover from a defensive line standpoint. So, and then the other thing is you have to, we talk about confidence as an offensive lineman, you have to be able to sit back and go, I'm so good with my body position, my profile, my hands, my punch, and my reset that I'm begging you to bull rush me every play. Like, I want you to do that and stop me. I mean, you see Mailata against our guys. That's exactly what I'm begging you to do. Please bull rush me because I know I can stop you, you know, 20 out of 20 times. And so that's where you can get some improvement. Just this goes back to like, you can scheme it up and eventually you have to teach these guys how to win one-on-one more consistently. And how do you do that? You know, through kind of all the mastery things we were talking about at the quarterback position. Andy, the other big thing here is we've talked about this for I think years now with this line. They've got some really good players. You know, Elgton Jenkins is a really good player. Zach Thomas is a really good player. You know, Rashid Walker is a good left tackle. I don't know. I said this on my show, and this is kind of a broader thing. Like, the head coach is very well manicured. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And you look at like the guy on the other, Sirianni on the other side. He's a scruffy. Looks like he's been out on a binge. You know, you look at Vrabel. He's like, you know, Dan Camp. Like, there's all different kinds of guys that bring their energy, bring their whatever it is about their personality, and instills it on this team. Who, if Matt, I'm just, I guess this is my way of saying, like, I don't know if Matt LaFleur is like the tough guy in the bar, you know. I don't know if he's the bouncer.
Yep.
So if he's not, and he's not bringing that energy, who on this team is? And usually it's this offensive line. And who on that offensive line is that person, or who is, how do you make it that group? I'm not around these guys, but when I watch them play again, I don't see a TJ Lang out there, you know, not the most gifted guy, but I'll be damned if I, you know, he's the first guy I call if I need to get in a street fight.
Right.
So where's that grit and feeling that you get from these really high level offensive lines? I think they're still searching for that.
Well, unfortunately, Green Bay season is over, but that doesn't mean that the winning on Prize Picks needs to come to an end. The divisional round is one of the best weekends in sports, and right now on Prize Picks, you can win up to 1,000 times your money, and that's because Prize Picks is the best place to get real money action while watching the playoffs. Prize Picks also offers a variety of weekly promotions that can lead to big payouts, and don't forget that there are plenty of other sports available to play as well, and it's never a bad time to get in on the basketball action. This week, I'm going with both Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson to put on a show, Saquon Barkley to continue his ridiculous tear, and Amon-Ra St. Brown to once again dominate with multiple receptions. The best part is that you can download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup by using code PACKADAY. Prize Picks. Run your game.
Yeah, I think they need the you know, that sort of enforcer, mauler, whatever you want to call it, the guy that's going to, again, be the first one to get in the fight as soon as he gets a chance. Not in a bad way, but in a good way. Yeah, I think they need a little bit of that. I think they need a little bit more, you know, piss and vinegar. I think you could say the same thing for the most part on the defensive front as well. It just feels like they're lacking that little bit of intensity. I do think Josh Jacobs brought an intensity to this team from the running back position. I do think Xavier McKinney, I love, man, Xavier McKinney, I'm sure you've seen it when watching the tape, man, he wears it on his sleeve. And like, when somebody makes a mistake, he'll get on him right on the field and start talking to him and pointing, like, and getting after him. And then that conversation you could tell he was having with Carrington Valentine along the sidelines. My God, I love that dude. What a signing he was in all aspects of it. But it feels like there's a couple of those guys on this team, but I definitely agree with you, especially in the trenches and in some of those, you know, key positions, it feels like they could use a little bit more of that.
Yeah, Josh and Jaden Reed seems like the kind of guy too. Just from a competitive standpoint, I'm just talking about guys who just love to, like, just loves to compete, right? Just loves to compete. I remember, and I don't think it can be one guy. And a lot of times you can be the spark maybe, but you need a group that's just this is how we operate. And they don't. I don't know how to say this. Like Marco Rivera was not a tough guy. In the Hollywood sense,
right?
But he was a tough guy. You know, I mean, he could absolutely give it to you every single play. and he was gonna, and if he could bury you, he was gonna bury you every single play. Now, whether he was, walked around with his chest out or all that, that's not what we're talking about. Right? We're just talking about dudes who love finishing people over piles. We like dudes who are not going to put up with anything. And those are the kind of guys that win you a lot of football games. I'll tell you what, I remember when I was in the first year I got to Carolina, we went to the NFC Championship. And I remember my line coach, and they from day one, they were on me like, you got to make this group tougher. You got to make this group tougher. And, I'm out there. I was pretty well known for my finishing and just really kind of playing through the whistle and all that kind of stuff. And I would have these side conversations with different guys, and we had these group, at the end of the year, we're going to the NFC Championship. The coach is like, I'm really disappointed that you haven't made these guys any tougher. And I go, you drafted nice guys. I'm having a really hard time making nice guys mean guys. And sometimes it's just a mindset. You talked about the defensive line, and not that they're nice guys or mean guys or anything, but you have a bunch of guys that are running like a little bit more of a catch defense than an attacking defense. Don't you think mentality wise, they're going to be different?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? We talked about it with Kenny Clark at the beginning of the year. It'll be interesting to see how a guy that, in my opinion, had all the tools to be a great elite level pass rusher, if he would have started as a rookie in this kind of attacking defense, but he's been in this different kind of mode for so long, how's that going to look? And, it's just, there's so much that goes on upstairs in these football players' heads that we don't think about. We just kind of look at him and go, he's fast, he can move and everything. But it's like, this is what really matters.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. And they've got to find a way to get, again, a little bit more of that intensity, a little bit more physicality, a little bit more, just thinking fast and being able to react to what's going on out there. Hopefully not doing as much thinking. And again, I'm semi hopeful that in some of those guys, especially in second year of Jeff Hafley's defense, maybe can play a little bit faster in year two, but, it's going to be really interesting to see how some of that stuff plays out and what type of players they do add this offseason. If they get a little bit more of that grit and intensity, or if it's kind of same old, then it's the same way of, drafting and developing players. And they want, again, quote unquote Packer people, and that's the way that they're going to go, and we'll see. There's no perfect formula to win a Super Bowl, but I do feel like that formula needs to have a couple of those players exactly like you're talking about, just to set tone, intensity, and those sort of things, and maybe they could use a little bit more of that. Just really quick, as we wrap up the offensive line, were you surprised that Travis Glover was first man up on that left guard position when given the opportunity, or did they just not have a great option either way?
I guess I didn't even put any thought into it. I thought it was, to be fair, I thought he did really well from a footwork standpoint. He was in the right position. He just plays with his hands out way too much, and I know he got caught. There was one where Jordan skipped the pocket to the left where it's like, come on, ref, what call are we making here? But
right.
He did have some holding calls, and he does play with his hands out. But I think just from a, if you just look at it, it's like, okay, we're going to lose this game into the project. What does it look like? I was actually pretty bullish on the way he was moving around and the physicality he played with and his kind of willingness to come in and engage at the guard position against a really good defensive line.
Hey, he's an interesting player. I'm still excited about him long-term, big, physical, athletic. And I think has a little bit more of that. Obviously he's a bigger guy, but I don't know if guard is his right position long-term. He was drafted as a tackle, but we'll see. Either way, he's a fun player. It clearly did not go his way. He ends up getting benched for Telfort, but that was an interesting decision one way or the other. It had been Telfort up until that point who had kind of been the first guy up off the bench. And then for whatever reason, they went with Glover in this one and then eventually got over to Telfort. But interesting decision nonetheless. Of course, we talked about how, again, the coach and quarterback are all evaluated after this one. You talked about Matt LaFleur a little bit, but how do you kind of evaluate his overall job on the season as well?
I think he's turned into, since Aaron Rodgers left, it's like where I kind of start the litmus test with him, honestly. Sure. And I just think he's done a great job. I say the well-manicured thing a little bit tongue in cheek. I think he's a really, really good football coach. And I think it just, in this day and age, there's all different types. He's certainly not the kind of football coach I'm used to seeing. He's not a Mike Sherman. He's not a Mike Holmgren. He's not those kind of guys. But he's an offensive genius. I think he's one of the better play callers in the National Football League. it continues to frustrate me as a former player that this team is so inept at the fundamentals of the sport. And I think a lot of that has to just being around the league for the last 30 years. I think a lot of that has to do with what is prioritized in the meeting room and prioritized on the field. So I do take a little bit of kind of issue as a kind of fan of that part of the sport, yeah, that they don't spend as much time being really good at the details of they're clearly good at the details of executing the orbit and executing the motion and executing the, you know, all of that stuff. But it's just like you're talking with the wrong, they're breaking the routes off the wrong level. Well, all of that comes, it's like how you do anything you love is how you do everything you love. Right. And so if it's important to you, then your stance is important to you, your first step, the way you shift out of your body position to get away from a DB, like every detail matters when you're trying to be a master of your craft. And every time we get done with the conversation with these kind of games every year, it, for me, it always just goes back to when you watch the best guys do it at the highest level, they are so consistent in the basic things, the basic of their positional requirements, that they can't help but be great. Yeah. And you just hope, I think that, and I think Halfley did a really good job this year, but you just hope that Matt maybe looks at that a little bit more and says, okay, I've got this part down. Like, I've got the scheme down. We understand the personnel. I have a great relationship with the GM. Like, all this stuff is going so well. What is preventing us from getting over the top? And look in your own division. Who, the best team in the division is the Detroit Lions. Why? Well, there's two things, really. Their culture is kind of what we were just talking about. Every single one of those guys is just the definition of grit, right? I'm going to hit you right up to the echo of the whistle. Everybody thinks they're playing dirty. They just play hard, but they're going to take their shots. They're trying to aggravate you. They're trying to get on your bad side. They like that brand of football. They want to play physical. They want to be the bullies. But they're also very specific in key positions on how they move, what their body position, the details of their sports. They're very, very specific. So how are you going to beat those guys if you're not going to be that kind of team? Like, I just think it's really hard, given how much talent there is in this division alone. I think it's really hard to take back the division if you don't pay as much attention to the details of kind of individual winning your one-on-one matchups as, you know, the top guys in the division are. And I think that's, I mean, for me, that's why the Lions are so successful. So it's like, let's take a page out of their book and try to learn some.
On that wavelength, one of the things that I have some concern about is you are clearly, or at least what wants to be, sort of a draft and develop team. I look at the two best players on the team this year, and that was Josh Jacobs and Xavier McKinney, who were not draft, they were free agents that you found, which are really good players, but that were really good coming into the team, right?
Yep.
I don't see anyone that they have drafted that has gotten, obviously Jordan Love from rookie season to now has taken a pretty significant step over that time. You can argue Rashawn Gary from rookie season, a little bit rawer player coming out, ish. That's maybe the raw is probably the wrong term, but needed some, you know, developmental on the NFL side, has gotten better through the course of his career. Even that, we're already going back to 2020 and 2019. To me, Adrian Cooper is really good, but he was kind of really good from the get go.
The jump,
right? I haven't seen LVN take a jump, Luke Musgrave take a jump. I mean, Jaden Reed was kind of good right away. I haven't seen it from Quay Walker, Devontae Wyatt. Zach Tom was kind of, again, good right away. I think there was definitely a jump in year two from him. Eric Stokes never took a jump. Josh Myers never really taken a jump. Like, just a lot of these really talented players, when you talk about the fundamentals and working on their craft and mastery and things like that, if you're going to spend early draft picks on guys that are a little bit more developmental and that are going to need that time, or are quote unquote projects, or even if they're not, if you want them to be able to kind of get better, that's the stuff that you kind of need to see. And it almost feels like there's like, if you give Matt LaFleur mature players who already know how to play and that are good to go, he knows how to plug them and play them in his offense. And I think Jeff Halfley very much similar in the defense, and they're going to be golden. But I haven't necessarily seen, I look at this year, I think Sean Ryan took a pretty solid, like a step this year from last year to this year. I think Tucker Kraft did.
No doubt.
Carrington Valentine a little bit. I just didn't see overall the jump from these players. I could make an argument that there were probably more players who took a step back this year than that took a step forward. Again, outside of, you know, the guys that you brought in new, fresh, Edgerrin Cooper, Evan Williams, Javon Bullard, Xavier McKinney, Josh Jacobs, those guys all performed pretty damn well. But I didn't see enough progression from the guys that were already on this team.
You just made some wonderful points. So the first one is, you know, Matt LaFleur, there's an art and a science to this game, right? And Matt LaFleur is the science part, clearly. He is, he's like a computer software program when it comes to understanding what he thinks people are good at and then adapting the offense to them, like creating the plays around what he thinks the strengths of these players are. I think he's really, really good at that. And to your point, he does a really good job with a Josh Jacobs. He does a really good job, or, you know, the team as a whole does Xavier McKinney. Like, these good players, like, obviously good players are going to be good anywhere they go.
Yeah.
But he doesn't, you know, he did in particular with Josh, you know, you kind of figure out what they're good at and you run more of it. Jaden Reed, you figure out what they're good at, you run more of it. First round draft picks, Quay, Devontae Wyatt, Lucas Van Ness, Jordan Morgan. Okay. And Jordan got hurt, but like, you know, he wasn't going to play. Yeah. We're in the same boat. You're looking at a lot of first round draft capital, and it's like the ROI on it, but it's not even, it's even maybe more so like the projected ROI on those players wasn't very high for a lot of people across the league, guys who were doing breakdowns of them, because I guess Goody, you know, it's like Goody has to also know, like, okay, even in this room, and there's limitations in this specific room of what this guy's capable of doing. Like, not every team has a coach in every room that can develop guys. And what happens a lot of times is like, oh, well, he's a professional coach, he can be able to develop them. That's not the case.
Yeah.
So to go back to your point with Jordan making that jump a couple of years ago with Rashawn Gary, you're talking about two guys who, maybe after year three, how did they get better? They left the building in the offseason and went to go get help.
Yes.
I mean, it's all over the internet. You want to see Jordan Love and Rashawn Gary practicing in the offseason, it's all over the internet. It's not hard to find.
No, it's not.
Right. So guys that are trying to get better are at least in large part doing that away from the building. And, you know, this, you're making, this is always the argument. And this is why, again, this is why I love the Lions staff so much. Cause it's like, you know, Ben Johnson's a genius, but you want to know why Jared Goff's so good? He's playing, Mark Brunell's been his quarterback coach. Like, what do you think's going to happen? You know, this isn't rocket science. Like, Aaron Glenn was really, really good. And then all his guys are also those, you know, those guys. So if you want to talk about the kind of the intimacy and because you don't have to have played to be a great coach. But if your passion isn't in the details of that, like, in other words, there's so many guys that are like their passion is putting together plays. Their passion is winning with scheme. And Matt's probably on that side, maybe more than the other side. But if that's your passion, that's fantastic. But you better find some other guys whose passion is to get these guys really, really coached up and developed on the details. And Andy, I think we had this conversation the last year and the year before.
Yeah.
And I think you just put it as eloquently as it could possibly be put. Like, that is the gap, and that is the question. And when are they going to get over that hump?
Did you ever have any interaction with Howard Mudd, coming up in the league or anything? Or like, I just had the opportunity to read his book, and you could tell just a lot of the things that you're mentioning, the passion for the details and how much he cares about his craft and like all the, like, just the nerdy minutia that you put into every little detail. Like, that's somebody that you can very tell from the get-go of like how passionate he is about the specifics. And that, just when you were talking about that, that's immediately where my mind went.
Yeah. So Mudd's got, I've read that book as well. I don't know. I know Tom. So Tom Moore is the guy that kind of changed my life. Okay. but not changed my life, but kind of flipped me on to like, oh, there's a lot of details that go into this game. But Mud is, you know, for a lot of guys, he's the dude that opened, you know, kind of shown the light on like, oh, there's a lot more to this, but it's also much simpler than all these other coaches are trying to make it. Sure. So the best Mud story that I can give you is Evan Mathis got drafted in Carolina the year I went there. And, you know, I think it was third round draft pick out of Alabama. He is to this day the biggest athletic freak I've ever seen in my life. I mean, I think I've told you these stories, but one day we're trying to squat. And so imagine I'm one of the stronger guys in the league at this point. So we start squatting, and this kid's from Alabama. He's broken every combine record, and he's doing it. So I said, let's see how strong you are. So we start with two plates, and then we go to three. We're going 2, 3, 4, 5, and then we'll start adding 25s. Like, this is a no-mess-around day. I'm testing him, right? On the 315, Andy, he does his 8 reps and then just shoulder presses the bar over his head and puts it back down. I said, okay, we're good. You know what I mean? I mean, he's that kind of freak, okay?
Yep.
He was a journeyman. Couldn't make it in Carolina, couldn't hack it, right? Coach was always on his head. Never coached him, just kind of told him how bad he was all the time, you know? Journeyman for years, goes to Cincinnati, goes to a bunch of different places. Goes to Philly.
With
Mud. And he'll tell you, Mud just sat him down, showed him some tape. He said it took 2 weeks, and he was all pro. Because it's just like anything else, man. Like, it's not the amount of time you spend in the league. It's not the amount of time. It's how thoughtful and curious you are about improving yourself on the daily, and what actions are you going to take so you can communicate that idea to the guy that's sitting in front of you. And some guys are just really good at it, and some guys are more about, look, Madden has been a phenomenon in the NFL world, because think about how much innovation, how many guys and minds have come playing that game growing up, right?
Yeah.
But there's two different things going on there, and you'd love to be great at both, but if you're not good at one, you better find somebody else that is.
I will say more coaches need to play more Madden to get the minutia of the game management and end game scenarios. Most 11-year-olds I play in Madden are better at end game scenarios than NFL head coaches, I swear sometimes. But yes, you are very, very correct in that assessment. All right, Mike, before we get out of here, let's throw a kind of a bow on everything. Just your final bow on 2024, where this team is at, and then kind of looking ahead to expectations in 2025.
You just got to feel really good about the new defense, first and foremost, and what they brought, not only from the personnel that you talked about coming in from free agency and obviously really, really good draft picks this year, but the defensive coordinator, the system, you feel like, okay, we have a real chance. Like, we have a real chance to be good on that side of the football. They're going to have to make some improvements. The defensive line, the lack of pass rush, the lack of development at pass rush, whether they need to bring in a pass rush specialist as a coach or whether they need to just draft or bring in some new players, like, that remains to be seen. But you don't really see a glaring weakness on that side of the football. Obviously, the cornerback position with the uncertainty with Jair Alexander and not knowing if Stokes is, you know, there's some stuff there. But you really feel good about the spine, I think, of that defense in general and just the philosophy that they're playing behind. But this team is only going to go as far as Jordan Love takes them. And, you know, if we're just being candid about this year, he is a phenomenal football player, but I don't know that he took a huge step forward by any means season. But I don't know statistically, but just watching tape, it just doesn't look like he took a step forward. It looks like we're talking about the same things today that we were last year at this time.
Yep.
And I think that is going to be the biggest difference in next year, is whether or not he can take that step. And what contributes to that, maybe first and foremost for me, are we going to get that marquee guy at the, they drafted Jordan Morgan first round, but he's not, as far as we know, he's not that guy that we're talking about, that we've been talking about for the last 45 minutes.
Yep.
Is that guy in the building? Is he going to emerge? Is Jordan Morgan to be that guy? Or do they have to bring somebody in? Because it would be worthwhile if they could. And then who's going to be the number one? I mean, Tucker Kraft is going to be a number one tight end in this league. I mean, he's phenomenal. You know, he's going to be a bring your popcorn guy. He's really fun to watch. Are you going to, with all these injuries and all the inconsistencies, who is going to emerge as the number one threat in the wide receiver room? Because we thought at the beginning of the year that was going to happen. It really didn't. I mean, I guess I would say Jaden Reed, but I don't know who you would say. I mean, it could be a It could be anybody, right?
He also led the league in drops, went through a middle stretch of the season that wasn't great. And even at times almost felt like he fell out of favor with like even some of the targets he was getting. So yeah, I would agree with you. I think he's the most talented player. I think he's the best wide receiver in that room, but did not give me necessarily the confidence this year of like, yep, I can count on him for 85 catches, 1400 yards, 8 touchdowns every single season or anything like that.
And that might be part of Matt's design.
Correct.
Right. So, and we don't know that, but you always do feel a little bit better when John Taylor has a Jerry Rice, Aikman's going to Urban in 4th and 8, that feels good. I think that feels good for the quarterback too. Devontae and Aaron, obviously free and Brett. So I think those two things are paramount. I think the offensive line is probably the most important, but you're really not going to go any further than Jordan Love. Tom Clements leaving is it'll be interesting what that interaction's like. And I'm always really interested now because, you know, I didn't think about all this kind of development stuff when I was playing. You're just trying to keep your head above water a little bit more, right? But now as you take a step back and you see what's available out there, I'm always interested to see, you know, do they what kind of attention does the coaching staff give their own development? What are they going to some of these, you know, are they going to Jordan Palmer and saying, okay, like, what are you teaching these guys that are playing so well? And how can we take some of this information from you? So we'll see.
Yes, we will see. It's going to be, I think, you know, just those questions now with Jordan, like the question's going to become is, you know, now that the 2 years that he's put in, is this just who he is, or can he take still another step forward? I think that's going to be, to your point, one of the real key questions in 2025 and just what he can become, or what were the injuries and the lack of practice time due to those injuries, what were really affecting him in the season? Like we said, some of the offensive line and wide receiver stuff. I do think if you're Brian Gutekunst, you have to go and be a little bit more aggressive this offseason and say, all right, we need to make sure that if we're going to get the ROI on Jordan, that we're putting the pieces around him in order for him to be successful. So he can be successful. The offense can be successful. And then you feel pretty comfortable that Jeff Hafley's making the inroads on defense. And then that's probably your avenue for success. So yeah, I'm there too. I think it starts and ends with getting the most out of Jordan Love that you possibly can.
So let me ask you this, Andy, every year after the season, they probably just had it or they're having it tonight. There's a staff meeting and they're going to go and they're going to grade every coach is going to give every player a grade.
Yep.
And then they're going to have this like general discussion of, okay, moving forward, what areas of the team, like what positions specifically do we need to get a new human on board in order to take this team over the top? Like if they have cap space for 3 guys, or they want to prioritize 3 guys in the draft, like where do you think those 3 guys are?
I think, to me, as much as I still liked what the defense did, I still think they need an impact pass rusher. I think that changed. I think it gives Jeff Hafley so much more optionality in what he's going to be able to do on defense. I don't think we even saw Jeff Hafley's defense this year, Mike. Like, I think he had to adapt it to the point because he didn't have a 4-man rush that he could rely upon. He didn't have, the man-to-man corners that he wanted to be able to play not a ton of man-to-man, but a little bit more man-to-man. Like, I don't even think we saw what he really wanted to do, but he was so great at adapting to what he had. He made it work, which I think is almost more impressive. But I think if you go out and get him a pass, like a legitimate pass rusher, and maybe a little bit of an upgrade at corner, I think he's going to even have more options at his disposal and can even be a better, you know, defensive coordinator, which is crazy to kind of think about. So pass rusher is still number one on my list. And then it gets a little bit more interesting in the fact of, I think there's really only, thinking out loud here, but I think corner, offensive line, and wide receiver are the other 3 that you look at. And I would be willing to be swayed one way or the other as to which one feels like the most important. I do feel like getting a number one wide receiver, if you can kind of get that, sort of clicks everything else into place. Meaning if all of a sudden like Watson or Dobbs, when Watson comes back, Watson or Dobbs are your 2, Reed is your slot guy, Wicks is kind of your depth guy, and then whatever after that. That feels to kind of click into place with Tucker Kraft and Josh Jacobs at, you know, tight end and running back respectively. Again, everything seems to click into place after that. So a part of me wants to say that. I know most really smart people that I talk to would say, you're probably better off to build the trenches and the offensive line and allow your quarterback more time, more comfortability. And if you've got a good quarterback, and even the wide receivers that they have are probably going to get open with that more time, and your quarterback's going to deliver more accurately. So I could easily be swayed to say, hey, like maybe go get a big time center, a big time offensive lineman, to whatever it is, to help solidify that line. I could hear that. And if you wanted to make the argument too for, hey, you know, Valentine and Nixon and Bullard and those guys were kind of able to get the job done. But when you go against more often the Justin Jeffersons, the Jordan Addisons, the Amon-Ra St. Browns, the AJ Browns, the Devontae Smiths, etc., you're going to need a dude out there. I could absolutely listen to that argument as well. But for me, pass rusher is still 1A. And then somewhere in the next three is corner, wide receiver, offensive lineman.
Yeah, that tracks for sure. I mean, when you look at the defense, like, there's a symbiotic relationship, obviously, between coverage and pressure. But I would make the argument that the pass rusher is in this case of paramount importance, because you don't have to game plan against anybody right now. You don't really have a difference maker, and that pass rush and that pressure, or even the anticipation of such, makes you change how you play football on offense, and it makes the job on the back end so much easier. So I totally agree with you there. I was just trying to go through my head about all the what I consider the really good, you know, offensive lines in the league, and then how many like studs they have on their team.
Yeah,
you look at the Eagles. The Eagles, you could argue they have, you know, four guys that are
like, at least,
you know,
yeah,
three or four. You know, the Lions have at least three guys there. So you start going down the list. It's like if we're gonna say that. By the way, we didn't talk about Zach Tom like looking in at the ball, like actually have his head completely turned for like two kicks before he turns out and looks at Smith. You're going like, well, no way, you're going to lose every time. That doesn't make sense.
That was a weird, uncharacteristic game for Zach Tom. I don't know what happened with him.
Yeah, it was the crowd noise, and then the bloody snap. That made no sense. That's what we call self-inflicted wounds. But
yes.
But if you think that Zach and Jenkins are kind of like top tier, second tier, but really, really good players, right? Then you've got to have, I think, one more guy on the offensive line. It's like you need the majority of them to be dudes.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And I don't know. I don't know that it matters what position. To be fair, I think if you decided that there was a right guard out there that was just an absolute can't miss, then it'd be like, okay, Hey, Sean Ryan, sorry, bud. Like, yeah, you can play center, but you could go get a right guard or a left tackle. But I think you need three out of five to be absolute dudes. I think we have two right now.
And I think too, because of some of the versatility of some of these guys too, you have the, like, if it is a tackle, you theoretically could move Zach Tom around. If it's a guard, you could theoretically move Ryan or Jenkins to center. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be one position. I'm not saying I would like advocate necessarily for some of those, but like, you do have some optionality too, where if it's sure. Like, you know, if you do grab a great player and it just happens to be whatever position you do, you know, they are seemingly willing to move some guys around, for better or worse at times. But yeah, I'm there too. I think the offensive line probably needs at least one more guy, and how they go about doing that will be kind of interesting. And how they, because I think they're gonna at least get two dudes in this free agency class. I think it could be very similar to last year, where they get one impact guy on offense, one impact guy on defense, and what positions they prioritize for that, I think, is going to be very interesting.
I just don't know what Jordan Morgan's going to be. You know, we you just don't know. And then I didn't know when I did my profile on him, before they drafted him. You know, when you look at him in the preseason, there's obviously athleticism and everything there, but is there like a level of potential dominance? Is there a mean streak? Is there like, what's that thing that separates him, and is that going to be able to translate across the entire line? Because they spent, again, like they did with Luka, you spend these first-round draft picks on guys that aren't necessarily starters, it makes it difficult for a general manager to go, my bad, and go get it. Like, this year, they probably knew they needed a defensive end this year. Like, oh, no, Lucas will, you know, he's going to step up. It's like, well, he stepped up and became the player that we thought he was going to be when he drafted, a really solid run-stopping, you know, defensive end, a little bit light, doesn't have any pass rush moves. Like, he's the exact same guy that he was when he drafted. And if you watch the draft tape, you would know that.
Yep.
So, but they're not going to go draft it. They're not going to bring in a prized defensive end, because everyone's going to go, well, wait a second, Goody, you just drafted this guy 13th pick in the draft. And so you do have a little bit of that issue, I think, coming in. It'll be interesting, but I think you do have that issue coming into this offseason, because you drafted a guy in the first round again.
Yeah. But I will say this, they're going to have to spend either early draft picks or free agent money on something, because they usually don't spend a first round pick on a wide receiver or give like a huge so they usually don't do that. If they don't, if they say no offensive lineman, because we just drafted Jordan Morgan, no defensive end due to LVN. I mean, I guess you could still attack corner and defensive tackle, but you're gonna have to address some of these positions in some way, whether it be via money.
Yeah, but I think I think after the second year with LVN, they're like, all right, we need to. Obviously, the numbers show that we need an issue. I just always look at it this way: if I'm sitting in the offensive line room right now, and it's Butkus, right, Luke Butkus. So if I'm Luke Butkus, and they're like, all right, Luke. The first question is Josh Myers. Yeah, you do one of these things, and they'll have his commentary, right? And then they go, okay, what do we need to improve? I'm guessing that unless he says like, oh, I want all pros at every position, he's probably going to go like, well, I like what I saw out of Walker this year. Right. I obviously like Jenkins. Sean Ryan took some steps forward, but we could have some competition at that position. Monk's there. We can step in. Jordan Morgan's there. We can have some with the competition with those three guys. And then I love Zach Tom. Like, he's not going to be sitting there going, unless Trent Williams is available. Like, he's not going to sit there and go, yeah, we just wanted to, let's take a shot on a first round draft pick unless he's, 350 kid from Georgia or something like that. I just don't know that conversation's happening. It'll be interesting.
Here's my prediction for what Green Bay does this offseason. I think they will add some sort of pass rusher in free agency, either at end or tackle. Mm-hmm. I think they will add a wide receiver in free agency, a upper echelon-ish wide receiver. I think they will draft a corner in the first or second round. I think they will add a solid-ish corner. I don't know who, it's something more like a 2-year, $10 million kind of deal. Not anything that's going to break the bank, but just kind of a competition there. And then I think they will draft three offensive linemen, one in the top 100, one probably in like round 4, another in round 6, something like that. And that will be primarily how they rebuild this team. That's kind of how I see it.
That makes sense. Do you think Nixon's the cornerback one, like he wants to be after the next year?
No, I don't think cornerback one, but I do think he will compete for obviously a spot on the outside. And I don't think he was quite as bad as people, want to think that he was. I think in an ideal world, he's like your corner 3 or 4, but you don't always live in an ideal world. And I do think he's good enough to compete for a spot on the starting defense, depending on what they do at the other positions and what they bring in at corner. The Valentine thing's interesting because I do think you have a pretty good cover player, but I think you saw the deficiencies very clear and obvious in this game. Missed a couple of tackles on Saquon Barkley. I think that first big run he had. And then, obviously the Dallas Goedert play is loud and clear. That's one where, you could tell, like, they went after him and teams have gone after him in the run game. I think that's why we saw a little bit more of a platoon with Eric Stokes earlier in the season of like, let's get Eric Stokes out here on some early downs and then, maybe try to have Valentine cover a little bit more. But that's clearly an issue right now.
I you make a really good point too. It could be a defensive tackle. You could bring in a marquee defensive tackle. You just saw what we experienced inside with the quality that they have. Jalen Carter. I mean, all the Georgia guys are, good God, they were really, Jalen Carter can really move.
He's a freak. Yeah.
He's something different.
Milton Williams in that game, free agent, by the way.
He played really well.
Yeah. He's an unrestricted free agent. The interesting, I talked about this with Justice as well, but like the interesting thing is if you get a pass rusher along the defensive line, right? Like TJ Slayton's the one that's the unrestricted free agent. Kenny is still, solid against the run or whatever. Yep. But if you get more of like a, let's just say you got a Milton Williams, right? Like now the rest of your defensive tackles are Carl Brooks, Devontae Wyatt, Milton Williams and Colby Wooden. I think I said Wyatt, Williams, Wooden and Brooks. Yeah. So those are like, you don't have a lot of run defense in that group. If you go get a pass rusher guy, so you can do it, but like, you've got to figure out who are going to be your run defenders outside of that. Or you need just an all around defensive tackle that you can find that can do everything.
Yeah, but then is the counter to that though are you satisfied that Kenny Clark's not your under guy, your nose, your 2-eye?
Meaning like, am I good with him doing that?
Meaning that now he plays that three tech.
Right.
And if you bring a smaller guy in, or he just moves over, because you go, from a production standpoint, that might make sense. And, and you know, again, that's something he's comfortable doing. I would love to see them. Like, I remember when we brought in Dhamkinsu to Miami, and it wasn't a good, it was a stupid thing to do, because you're not one player away. But right. I mean, the story is like the owner met him at like a hockey game and loved him. So they're like, you have to bring him to Dhamkinsu. I mean, it was like, it's as asinine as any story you've ever heard.
Right.
So they signed him this huge deal. But I'll never forget, like, they brought him in, and we had Pounce, like, you know, we have some dudes on the, you know, offensive line are pretty good players. And Dhamkinsu, like, the first day just decided that, like, the offense wasn't going to get a ball off. You know, like, I'm just going to sack the quarterback every play. We didn't have any guards. So he sacked the quarterback every play for an entire practice. And they're finally like, all right, let's just stop practice. And I was like, as good as defensive ends are, and as much credit as we give them, if you really want to disrupt an offense, get a three technique.
Yeah.
A three technique will ruin your day.
What they need is a Rams draft class where you go get, Braden Verse and Jared Verse. Like, oh, that was one of my favorite dudes in that draft.
Jared Verse is so much fun to watch, man. So I've had some guys play against him this year, so I've watched him a ton. And he you know, what's great about a guy like that is, like, he's so, and this is the Green Bay Packers could learn from this. He's so simplistic, right? He really has one move he has a stab, and then he has a stab that's like a windmill outside chop, right? And he's relentless, and he just understands angles better than most guys do naturally. Like, he's not trying to just run right down the middle of you. He wants to make your feet move, and then he's just going to press you wherever your feet are going. And it's like, that's it. And it just keeps over and over, and just being a relentless player as a rookie gets you that far along. I mean, he's really, really talented.
It's unfathomable that they lose Aaron Donald. Can you imagine if Aaron Donald played one more year and they still had both of those, like, they added Verse and Fisk still? Imagine, like, what that defense would look like right now.
Fisk is no joke either. Yeah, Fisk is no joke either. And then Brian Young last year, zero for them. He's a really good player. They did such a good – there's a guy who they – and Aaron Donald was great to tell them that they were leaving. But, like, what a great job of – is that Les Snead over there just going, like, okay, we'll never replace Aaron Donald, so let's try to replace him, like, by volume.
And the aggregate,
and they just – they're actually harder to game plan against now than they were.
Which is crazy. Can you imagine if, like, I don't even know what it's like from a salary cap standpoint, but can you imagine if, like, just for the playoffs, Aaron Donald's like, actually, I'm going to unretire and come back and play for the remainder of this playoffs?
Jesus Christ.
I know, right?
Could.
I'm sure that he, I mean, assuming he stayed in any sort of good shape whatsoever, I guarantee you he's still finding a way. Like, even if you play him 15, 20 snaps, he's finding a sack in pretty much every single one of those games and making an impact.
I can tell you one thing for sure. They ain't sleeping up there in the North.
No.
those linemen aren't sleeping well. If they said tomorrow, hey, Aaron Donald signed a 10 day.
What? Yeah. Nobody's going to be happy about that. Mike, I cannot thank you enough for everything all season long. These conversations are, you know, just absolutely some of my favorites all year long. I learned something every single time. It's awesome. You are unbelievable at what you do, from a ability to break down the game as somebody who's played in the game, as somebody who views it from an analytical standpoint, that can also really, you know, make it so that it's super digestible in every imaginable way. It's really, really special. I cannot thank you enough. And thanks for all your input, insight, and just time, effort, and energy all season long. Thank you so much.
It's fun talking ball with you, Andy. I appreciate the platform. So thanks for having me.
Where can we find all of your crazy stuff in the off season? I'm sure you'll be covering the draft a little bit. What do you got planned?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You can find all our stuff on the Process of Perform channel on YouTube, and obviously anywhere you get your podcast, if you want to listen to the audio stuff. I tell myself every year that I'm not going to bother with the draft, because, like, I don't really care until, like, they get to the team. And then I just find myself just start kind of sneaking a peek at guys and let's do a little bit. So I'll probably kick up here in about a month or so.
All right. Well, we'll be looking forward to that. Again, find him on Process to Perform. You can find him on Twitter at MikeWall68. Of course, you can find the podcast here at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for Mike and I today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.